Greetings, citizens of Twilight. This is Kinnack coming back to you for the April Twilight Heroes podcast. So, we've got some questions. Going to dive right in. Hopefully, won't be too long. Looks like our first question is actually Harry Dresden promising to uphold his volunteer duties and doing a transcript. So, that's awesome. If you're listening to this, you probably don't need a transcript, but if you'd like to follow along, there's a decent chance that if you scroll further down in the thread that Harry will have posted a transcript in case I mumble too much. If he hasn't, then, I mean, he promised, so blame him. A couple questions from Jessica. First, if you were given a genie that could add anything to Twilight Heroes real world, tie-in, whatever code things, that would take really long, magic floating coffee party for the players on rooftops with costumes with the Griffin, etc., what should you add? This is asked with the explicit understanding that it may never happen, because without genies there are limited resources. There are... I mean, I'm very, resource-driven, I guess. So the first thing that comes to mind with if I could, you know, snap my fingers and make stuff happen would be a bunch more advertising, because we're sort of in the beginnings of the loop of advertise more to get more money so we can advertise more so we can get more money so we can advertise more. And we're sort of starting that loop, but, it, you know, needs some extra movement, so a real world tie-in would be great for that. In, you know, my wildest dreams, we would end up having, some sort of massive, you know, game company built on these foundations, not because I particularly want to run a large company or even because I particularly want a bunch of money, but because it would be nice to be able to dabble in a bunch of different projects like role-playing games, you know, CCGs, other weirder computer game types that I don't necessarily have the resources to have a go at alone, so on. I would also definitely take the genie creating me like a clockwork code minion to do, you know, the tedious coding stuff that I don't want to do. There's a lot of just like as code bases get older, there's a lot of stuff that you're like, oh, that was obviously, you know, a really really good idea at the time, and it worked pretty well, but it hasn't really, you know, scaled well. We need to add stuff into it, and the way that it was built originally makes that difficult. Actually, going through a number of things like that sort of in parallel now, adding, like, the code for how items get used, and sort of replacing that as things come up, I'm actually doing some work on the computer system as well, which hopefully I'll be able to unveil whenever it gets done. But yeah, there's having a, you know, clockwork code minion would definitely do well there. The there's a game designer who I respect a great deal who at one point described one of his fellow game designers as a caffeine-powered robot, which I feel describes me. Would also be probably a good description for, you know, this imaginary minion that we're creating for me. The nice part about imaginary minions is you don't actually have to manage them, which I've found in my life that managing people often takes just as long as just doing it yourself until you get people really, really up to speed, which is the tricky part. I've had actually a couple of people ask if, you know, there's a Metroplex Games internship or anything like that, which I would really love to be able to extend that hand, but getting people, you know, into the code and moving is always challenging. challenging process when there's just, you know, me at this point. Second question, as someone who knows code things and can make games, what is your view on games as art? Is game creation an artistic pursuit, intellectual pursuit, or a way to create simple entertainment for the overworked? I mean, yes, is generally the correct answer here, but sort of a cop-out. I mean, I think it is, all three of the examples you provided are very true. They are, you know, artistic, intellectual, and pure distraction, entertainment. I would say, in the more specific sense that usually gets argued back and forth, that they very clearly are art. I think the best reason for that logically is almost a reductio ad absurdum question of, if you look at a game like, when I first made this argument, Final Fantasy VII was current, but if you look at a game like Final Fantasy VII, you have what is in essence a movie split up by game chunks, and if we accept the idea that movies can be art, you kind of have to accept that a movie plus some other stuff is still art. It's certainly possible that people can argue against that, like, you know, oh, you know, it was art, and then you added this thing, and it became not art, because the definition of art is the sort of thing that you get to make weird arguments like that about. But I think under any sort of, like, internally consistent definition of art, you have to accept that a game with, you know, cutscenes like Final Fantasy VII has to be able to be art, and a game like Twilight Heroes, which has, you know, about a novel's worth of text buried in it, if we accept that, you know, a novel, or even, like, you know, a speech, or a particularly good turn of phrase, is art, then Twilight Heroes has to be art. Has to be able to be art. Which, I guess, comes to, really, the core question, though. The question that, the people who mostly argue that games aren't art aren't even going to get to. So I feel like the supposition that games can't be art is just people being idiots, basically. In that you had the same people, not literally the same people, but the, you know, bowler-wearing, moustached versions of the same people making the same arguments about movies decades ago. And you had very much the same people in, you know, brightly colored vests and pants that didn't have fasteners yet, and codpieces, making the same arguments about, you know, secular music hundreds of years ago. And there is some evidence, although not as much, for obvious reasons, that the same arguments were being made in Athens about the written word. Which is kind of cool. In any case. Oh, and there's also, I'm sure, the same stretch of arguments about visual art. That's just not my area of expertise. I'm sure that Puyo, who's a good friend of mine who does the art for Metroplex, could give you the whole rundown for stupid shit like that people have said over the ages about visual art. Anyway, so we can look at and discard the basic argument there that people tend to make about this. I think the more interesting question is actually one of, so there's a, in games, there's a question of, you get into this a lot with, like, intellectual property law, of all things, but there's a question of mechanics and presentation, and the question of, like, the examples that I've been using to say, clearly, obviously, this is art. I mean, like, it's just almost definitionally, you have to let this be art, is on the presentation side of things, rather than the mechanical side of things. And that's where I think it actually gets kind of interesting. Because, I mean, depending on obviously, definition of art that we want to use, but assuming we're going to use the sort of general art is something that provokes an emotional response from the viewer that communicates emotion to the viewer, can game mechanics do that? And I think that that's actually a kind of interesting question. And I think that they clearly can provoke and communicate an emotional response. But whether that is done in the way that we usually define as art is a more vague question. There's an implied rule of art that I feel like some people include in their definition without stating it, that art is not something that is actually interactive, like it passively communicates to this, basically. Like you're, by observing it, this is being communicated to you. And so, it's a question of something like, is a, you know, improv jam session art to the people who are participating in the jam session, or is it just art to the people who are watching the jam session? And is, you know, is Shakespeare, obviously, you know, art, but is, you know, if you know, Patrick Stewart is, you know, engaging in, is playing a character in King Lear, is he experiencing it as art, or is he part of the creator of the art? And I feel like, from a personal standpoint, that even that yes, the people in the jam session are enjoying it as art as they are creating it, and that, you know, it is art to them, and it is art to Patrick Stewart. But I think that that's, yeah, more of the interesting question. Because, I guess, pulling back a little bit, I said earlier that you can obviously provoke emotional responses and communicate emotion through game mechanics. I think that that's actually one of the, when you get down to fundamental levels of not, like, moving from, I guess, game design to, like, good game design. And I don't consider myself an expert on this by any means, but making that jump is largely about learning how to use the mechanics to elicit those responses. So while a good example is something like, I usually go to Magic the Gathering as an example, but I think old games like, you can tell when I was, you know, forming a lot of these opinions, games like Silent Hill, you can, the mechanics of Magic and of Silent Hill actually help draw you into those emotional responses. The randomness of magic is a good example of that. Like, people have strong opinions about randomness in games, but the experience of unexpectedness and those sort of intermittent returns are extremely strong emotional motivators. And by tying that into people's, I mean, really, like, sense of self-worth, not necessarily, you know, in a cosmic sense, although some people do, I mean, base their actual honest-to-God sense of self-worth on their ability to play these games, which is, I mean, there are a few greater compliments, I think, that can be paid to a game designer than, you know, to have people who identify as players of their games. And I feel that there are not many games that have reached that level. But if you're talking about, you know, high compliments you can pay to, you know, Gary Gygax or David Arneson or Richard Garfield, saying, like, you know, identifying yourself as, you know, I am a D&D player, you know, as, like, one of your primary personal identifiers, like, holy fuck, like, that's a high compliment to pay to the designers. But anyway, so the by tying in that sort of randomness into the victory situation, and also tying in these other aspects that people value about themselves, this sort of, like, strategic thinking, creativity, which are sort of the other aspects of the victory, they actually, it's a lot like adding salt to a dish that you're cooking. So if you have, you know, your your creativity and strategic decision-making pasta, it's not going to be a bad pasta, right? Like, creativity and strategic decision-making are things that are interesting and really are valuable, but you toss a little randomness on there, and appropriately enough, might raise people's blood pressure, but it also makes those flavors much stronger. You can't just, you know, throw a huge handful of salt in there and be like, ah, this will be great! But, you know, a little bit, the right amount, and it really brings out the existing flavors, as it were. I think that, if anything, an even better example is the radio in Silent Hill, which... So what we were talking about was earlier with the presentation and the mechanics. So you have the presentation of this game, which is, you know, the sort of misty city. You can't see very far, which is actually for technical reasons, which is hilarious. But and you have, like, all these, you know, monsters creeping around and scary shit's happening. And one of the most important things to communicate a sort of frightening environment is sound. A lot of that emotional impact can really be deadened by just, you know, muting whatever you're listening to. So you mute it, turn on the subtitles if there's, you know, subtitled if there's actual conversation you need to figure out what's going on, and you can really disconnect yourself very effectively. But in Silent Hill, there's a radio that functions as a sort of, like, non-specific radar to let you know when monsters are nearby. It increases increasingly large amounts of static as stuff approach, which is kind of freaky on its own, like, just that idea. And, like, the, you know, like, oh, fuck, something terrible is going to happen, the static's coming, gets you on edge. But also, in a much more subtle way, means that you can't either turn off or entirely tune out the sound. It actually draws you into the presentation, and doesn't let you ignore the presentation, which is, I think, really top-notch example of design there, and what you want to be doing in design as art. A somewhat more obscure but recent example, being a paltry 5 years old, is Pathfinder campaign that I'm running. They're going through Rise of the Runelords, which is the first adventure path for Pathfinder, which is an outgrowth of 3rd edition D&D, made by Paizo, who are awesome people. You should give them all of your money. Well, I guess you can split it between me and them. If I'm telling you who to give your money, I guess I'll take some of it too. But they're great people, and I give them entirely too much of my money. So, you know, I guess it all balances out. But anyway, there's a adventure in the path, which is set in a fairly traditional haunted house, which does not work well in tabletop role-playing games, typically. You need to have... Like, I consider myself a very good GM, and it's something that I've been doing for a long time, and it's something that I would consider myself a lot better at than even in game development, which I've also been doing for a really long time. But even with that said, I don't consider myself a good enough GM to consistently run a good haunted house scenario. It's really, really challenging, even using, like, the little tricks of, you know, making sure the lights aren't too bright, make sure there aren't too many distractions, you know, music if your group's into that, whatever. But what the adventure does is makes the haunting itself the clues to what's going on. Like, to, you know, quote, win, you need to collect these clues from the various haunts, which means, in essence, the same sort of thing that we were talking about with the radio in Silent Hill, that you can't just tune them out. Like, you have to engage with these haunts the haunted house to win. And that means that it is a much more effective vector for fear, because you can't just... I mean, if it's just like, you know, cat jumps out of the shadows or whatever, that's only effective if people are tuned in and paying attention, and making people feel things they may not necessarily want to feel in the moment. You know, making people experience negative emotions, whether your intent there is to be a dick or, you know, catharsis or whatever, but making people feel things they don't necessarily want to feel. The hardest part of that is keeping people from tuning it out. And it's very easy to tune out in a tabletop role-playing setting. So you can actually use the mechanics to draw people in to the, you know, the stage dressing, as it were, the presentation. If people have to pay attention to what you're saying when you're, you know, describing these horrific hauntings to figure out, you know, the larger mystery, then they can't just, you know, tune them out and not be scared. Anyway, yes, I think games trivially can be art, but there's also this sort of underlying question of how game mechanics relate to art, which is really, I think, a more interesting question. And I feel that the game mechanics themselves definitely can be art, but for legal purposes, they are not, which is interesting, in that you can't actually copyright the mechanics. You can patent them, which it gets into a pretty weird territory. But, yeah. Hopefully that was interesting. Professor Zane, why don't you give me my genuine look like World Series 2013 ring? I was actually considering, and this makes me a terrible person, I was considering sending either a different ring or something else entirely, possibly a delicious donut, for April Fool's, because I got Satan's request for a World Series 2013 ring shortly before the beginning of April. But I guess we'll have to wait and see when 2013 comes around again. Some questions from Sanjuro. Where's the pink bunny suit we were all expecting? Referring to the ugly cashmere sweater, which I really deeply enjoy the text on that. Just the chick's love to good taste is a phenomenal turn of phrase that I can take absolutely no credit for, but it makes me happy. I think it would not surprise me to eventually run across a pink bunny suit. That seems like the sort of thing that is almost assuredly going to show up at some point. Any new second question, any new developments in marketing the game and expanding the player base? That actually goes back into what I was talking about before. Our first foray into the world of advertising went very well. So it's just a question of waiting for money to pile up so that we can use that piled up money to do more advertising, so that we can get more piled up money to, you know, do more advertising. The second part of the question, is there anything players can do to help? Donating does, directly help. Dollar we basically get over, you know, server costs to make sure that I don't starve to death and I don't starve cheap, goes into the said pile of money to do advertising. That's really the that's the other expense on the budget. As it were. So, more important thing you can do if you have not, you know, told all of your friends about Twilight Heroes, that's a huge start. I mean, word of mouth is, as much as I would like to think that, you know, my incredible, you know, advertising savvy and Liz's graphic design skills can bring us to, you know, world domination. Word of mouth, best advertising, bar none. A large part, actually, of... This is kind of interesting, at least to me. A large part of the advertising that we get, the value of advertising that we do, is what I should say, is actually not immediately felt. It's the residuals and networking from that advertising, I'm not looking at the exact numbers right now, but if we, you know, put up an ad and we get like 500 new people to try the game, you know, 100 of them stay, that's awesome. But if you look out over the course of a year or so, you will see that each of those people who stayed, and even probably some of the ones who didn't, bring in more people. You will actually end up getting that trickle of additional players are both better selected. Like, you'll see more new players that keep playing in sort of the tail of the advertisement than in the original search. We also see, like, just numerically as many, if not more, people. So it's, you get, with a little, you know, patience, you'll actually see substantially more people referenced from new players than you will with the original advertising itself, which is really cool. Among other things, it means that people like it, and that it's fun, and they want their friends to play, which is not as high a compliment as I was talking about earlier with people, you know, identifying themselves, you know, largely as the D&D player is one of their primary, you know, identifications, but it is still quite the high compliment, and is one that I definitely smile to see every time we get, you know, a little spike of new players echoing off, you know, a large group that came in, because that means that, you know, people are pulling in their friends, which is super cool. So yeah. Telling your friends about it, like I said, even just, you know, liking things, when we post updates on Facebook that you like, you know, liking those, or even just, you know, liking the main Twilight Heroes page, Twitter. I don't, for what it's worth, I do not actually look at the Twitter account at all. It just automatically posts whatever I do on the Facebook page. But that said, you know, retweeting. So don't try to tell me things on the Twitter feed. But retweeting those things obviously is another thing you can do just as a signal boost. So I mean, any sort of communications like that are a big deal. So the word of mouth. If you are a member on any other web forums where you think that people might be interested in Twilight Heroes, whether that's, you know, because it's got a bunch of geeks there, because it's got a bunch of superhero fans there, it's got a bunch of, you know, people who are at work there, whatever. You can use one of the banners that we've created, or a different banner if you want to put one together, in which case we'll add it to the banners list. I've been shirts have never been a big thing. If there is any demand, I can get a new set of shirts up on, you know, Zazzle or what have us. Just to, if you did want to wear those, I think the only person who has bought anything from Metroplexity or Twilight Heroes stores, well, I've been in charge for them. The Twilight Heroes one has been sort of shuffled off. The Metroplexity one might have been as well, as I don't honestly remember. But anyway, moral of the story, for the, like, combined 8 years or something that those things were up, I'm the only person who got any of them, which is fine. Like, I need shirts to wear that are like, hey, I run a game, please play it, but if other people actually want to wear shirts that advertise the game, obviously shirts at cost that advertise the game are pro. Everybody wins. But yeah. So I guess if anybody actually wants to do that, let me know, and I will re-in Shirtnos. It's just been a very low priority because nobody seems to be interested, which is fine. Less work for me. So yeah, there's like I said, a lot you can do. Let's see, donating, social media, shirts if anyone's interested, and just straight up word of mouth And it's possible I missed something, but... Oh, I got the banners. And since no one else has asked that, what improvements to the game have you been working on? I mentioned that I'm working on revamping the computer code, which will come with actually quite a few changes to how they work, which I think involve things that people will like and people will probably like less. But I'm pretty sure are good for the game overall and just less sort of less annoyance, more like things working the way that they were intended to work. I'm also still knee deep in the quest that comes after the brute quest. That's making slow but sure progress. Let's see, since the last podcast I added a bunch of ton of drops and a bunch of special abilities, which will make more sense when you're playing through it, but there's a sort of theme in the central part of the adventure, about the central part of the quest, about special enemy abilities. Let's see. I think that's about all I've gotten done there. So those are the two things that I'm mainly chugging away on now. Once I get the computer stuff done, next, quote, small project, because the I like to, you know, have a small project and a big project. The small computer revamp ended up becoming a larger project than I intended, but the next small project after that would probably be a League Boss. And once I get done with the mad scientist stuff, next big project will probably be some a really cool thing that will lead into hopefully a PvP revamp. But that's a long-term thing. Another long-term thing, so... some questions from Earth Mortian. Love the idea of the rental equipment, wrath, etc., from the fickle hand of fate. How about a lottery event for those who donate for the month that has prizes that include past items of the month? It would be an excellent way to create a new influx of now on the table items, and who knows, maybe there would be an increase in donation from people hoping to get a shot at something rare. If that's too much, stomach, perhaps a month-long rental voucher for an item of choice. Actually, the rental voucher is kind of a an interesting idea. I have been thinking a number of, I'm just going to air this. This is caveat up front, not a promise, this is just something that I've been thinking about regarding the old items of the month. There are sort of the old items become obviously unattainable for, you know, a pair of reasons. They're not in the store anymore. But also, the accounts that those items are on go inactive as people, you know, naturally enter and leave the game. Which means that the total number of some of those items in the economy drops very low, and they essentially just become unattainable. And it's in some cases quite literally unattainable, and if they're, you know, sidekick items and skill items, all of them get used. And there are a number of ways to fix that. I mean, in Metroplexity, the donations are just set up differently, so that old items rotate back in. I'm hesitant to apply that sort of logic to Twilight Heroes unless it's something that we sort of start you know, now and moving forward, right? Like, so people aren't donating for items that they think won't rotate back in, that do rotate back in. That seems like kind of a dick move. But, I mean, if that's something we wanted to do going forward, it would be a simple enough thing to do. It just wouldn't, it wouldn't take effect on the old items. It would be, you know, moving forward into the future. But obviously not something that I'm opposed to, because that's what I did in Metroplex City. The other thing, I guess the thing that I look at as more of a loophole, sort of, is that second category that I was talking about, the numbers decreasing over time as people leave the game. And I feel like it wouldn't be a huge slap in the face if it kept track of sort of the number of inactive items and used that as a rubric for how many we could reintroduce through various means. And that could show up in a lot of different ways. That, if we're talking about past items, that's my, I think, preferred way to do it, basing it on the number of, you know, inactive copies of each item. So, you know, either in someone's inventory that's gone inactive or in, you know, their memento shelves that's gone inactive, or, you know, sidekick that they've used and then went inactive or whatever. So this would also mostly be substantially older items, because, you know, it's not going to be like stuff in the last year, right, where someone has to be inactive for quite a while. and it also means that there will be some fluctuation, you know, as, you know, inactive people come back to the game, which happens also not infrequently. That number will tick back down, so we don't want to go, you know, totally nuts. So if if we were going to go that sort of direction, I think something like a raffle wouldn't be an inappropriate way to do that, either based on donations or some sort of, you know, in-world event. I think that whatever ends up happening, they would end up being you still have to donate for them one way or another. So either you'd get, like, you know, the proto item, and then, you know, that is essentially, you know, the ability to give, you know, combine it with a gold star and get the item that it represents, whatever. Or just, you know, keep the proto item, or sell the proto item to somebody else, or whatever. Or if, in the other case, directly donating for it. So, the other thing that I've been thinking about more recently, and I haven't even talked about this with the dev team yet, so, like I said, don't consider this even the slightest bit of a promise. I was thinking about switching over the auction house for this purpose, because since the law came in, nobody uses the auction house. Like, it's just, like, wasteland. It's like I could accidentally drop the auction house table and nobody would know but me for, like, weeks. So, obviously, we need to do something with the auction hall. The auction house. The International House of Auctions, which is a fabulous name, by the way. Which I can also not take any credit for, but it's a fabulous name. The what I was thinking about with that is we could have like a weekly, you know, an item comes back, or, you know, however many copies of this item, and then let people, I mean, just bid silver stars on them. Which is, I think, imminently fair. it makes me feel a little weird, because it's like, I mean, they're a donation item, so, like, donating for them is not weird, but, like, the auction ends up making it feel a bit like a money grab, which is not something that I want to feel like. The other option being, like, some sort of auction where it's auctioned for chips, and then you donate to get the item, which just seems like sort of stupidly dual, you know, dual currencied. Obviously, at the end of the day, you can still, you know, buy silver stars with chips and use the silver stars to get the items. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not too bad. But in any case, that's one of the other things I was thinking about, just sort of having a slow reintroduction that way and letting the whatever the market will bear, basically, be the price with a floor of, you know, whatever they were originally worth. And, you know, if no one wants them, no one wants them. And if people do want them, then, I mean, that'll set, you know, whatever, whatever price they should be at. So, I mean, it's something that I do think about not infrequently, just because, I mean, there's a lot of really neat old items, and it does seem sort of a shame to lock them out. And, of course, if we start doing that, maybe I can get Satan his, you know, genuine replica 2013 ring. Oh, so I'm momentarily distracted because there's a cardinal in our rhubarb poking around. So, the cardinal has now gone through our asparagus and is now looking at some of our compost. If you couldn't guess from that interlude, we do quite a bit of gardening. Some of the other things you suggested are also pretty interesting, with the like raffling an item off every month, you know, based on the number of stars you donated for, or having some sort of longer term rental system, which would be kind of interesting. It's an easy enough thing for the for rollover to handle, just, you know, the first of every month to clean up those items. Although, that said, having rental versions of existing items is quite a bit of overhead, because it needs to be, basically, they need to have different item IDs. So I'd need to go through and duplicate all of the old items, and then duplicate the items coming forward, because they will eventually become old items, so that the, you know, the rollover script doesn't, you know, delete actual, you know, items of the month, which would be pretty depressing. I feel like for this purpose, rental probably isn't the best solution, just because there's a lot of different forms that items end up taking. Because you have things like the Recyclotron, which is the forebearer of the box of goats, which is one of my favorite items ever, just because it's goats. Although the item is coming out tomorrow, is a close competitor for a very similar reason. It does not involve goats, to my knowledge. But so yeah, I don't necessarily think that's the that rental is necessarily the perfect fit. So I'd probably go for some sort of permanent solution. The obvious other solution is I think the one that's really, like, probably not going to happen is something like rotating in old items that from before, I would say, you know, things are going to start rotating, which is 6-1, half a dozen of the other. I consider that sort of like the nuclear option. If, you know, nothing else works for whatever reason, then that's, you know, the very last thing on the table. But I that's, yeah, not something that I'm interested in doing if we can avoid it. Hopefully, you know, that discussion was helpful to you in some way. I know that you're looking to find some ways to get some of the old donation items, and a lot of them are not on the market at all, which complicates that matter. If it were the sort of thing where it's like, oh, you know, I want to get item X, but it's like, you know, 30 million or whatever in the mall, I'd be like, whatever. Not my problem, basically. Not sound like a dick, but I don't feel like at that point that it is my problem at all. But if it's something where it's like, I want to get this item, but like, it's an old donation item, so I can't donate for it, and there are zero copies in the mall, or they're all, you know, set, not for sale or whatever. That's a separate thing where it's like, well, yeah. And, you know, there's, you know, the possibility with that of some of the other old items, which might be available for, you know, just chips or whatever. But, I'm not entirely sure how that's going to play out over the long term. But I think the the items on an active count is probably where that'll those numbers will be drawn from, like how many end up being available through whatever mechanic we went with. So, case, moving on to Christiana. No question, just wanted to say hi, Christiana. Every place where I was like, I can't claim any responsibility for how awesome this is, that was all her. So, yay! Some questions from Islaughter. First, are there any merit badges out there we don't know about, especially when it's implemented by you? There are quite a few merit badges that I have added during my time as developer. Let's see. There's even one that I added before I technically took over, I believe, as I was sort of learning the ropes. I was like, this is way too hilarious to not be a merit badge, and I added it in there. And that one is actually still undiscovered. So my tendency to hide things too well is not, as it turns out, tied to any one particular game. Although, how things get hidden here and how things get hidden in Metroplex here are two very different beasts. Let me see. There are... I have personally added 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 merit badges. And I think most of those have been found. Not actually including the first one that I mentioned. Let's see. There's one associated with a day of the week that I'm pretty sure nobody's found. It's the futility belt one, which people found. Talismaniac, which I'm pretty sure people found. Most interesting run in the world. The Ion Skills one. Trick or Treat one that was bugged and had to fix because it was being dumb. But a number of people found and the one associated with the Ides, which I'm fairly sure people found. If not, I feel dumb for revealing that. Let me make sure. Okay, good, yeah. Woo! If you're worried about getting that one, do not worry. The Ides come in many months. and then, yeah, there's one other one that's more recent that's possibly known, sort of, but not, but I don't think that anyone's actually gotten it yet. Hinted at, we'll say. Then obviously there are some from Rhymes development that do not have that nobody's found yet. Secondly, would you be willing to give out a hint on a couple? I think I mentioned I think there were probably some hints in my rambling there. I think most of them have been found though in one like the most interesting run in the world. Yeah, has been found, the Ion Skills one, not the Trick or Treat one. Or most of the recent ones. I would say out of the So there's the first one I added that nobody's found. Because I'm a terrible person. The third one I added, nobody's found. Sixth one I added, nobody's found. And counting is hard. I guess it would be the tenth, the second to the last one I added, nobody's found. I guess there have been an array of hints in my life. Hopefully some of them are useful or at least interesting. Also wanted to say hi, hello! That wraps up our questions and our highs. Hopefully some of my ramblings and pseudo-hints in there have been interesting. I had a good time answering your questions, so hopefully you had a good time asking them or listening to my answers to the questions, or in a perfect world, both. I don't think there's anything that I need to close out with other than I guess this is sort of a I brainstormed a little bit about Old Donation Items, or at least told you a little bit about what I was thinking about. If, you'll set the server on fire and throw it at me for any reason related to that, feel free to let me know. If you have access to the server to set it on fire and throw it at me, definitely let me know, because I will take that much more seriously. On a setting the server on fire note, we did eventually figure out what had happened with the outage, which was related to a motherboard flaking out on the file server, which is not a good time. and of course, flaking out on the file server after any reasonable time to get a spare motherboard of that type was one of the. I'm actually quite often glad that I don't try and do our hosting here, because A, I don't have the facilities for it. But B, if that had happened to me, I'd basically just have been completely halved. Whereas with our hosts, it wasn't a great situation by any stretch of the imagination. But they have people on hand to figure out, you know, exactly where that failure occurred, and the contacts necessary to get a new component of that type in, you know, the middle of the weekend, and get it installed. So, I it's like, well, that was a shitty situation, but I don't think that my fault made it any better. It's not as though if I had it in-house that motherboards become indestructible. So, that worked out as well as could be hoped. And they're continuing to try to make things less I've lost the impressive sounding term for that, less single point failure, there we go. And actually, it sounds like they're making some strides with that, which is actually, for what it's worth, the other reason that I really would not like to have it here, because it would be very, everything would be single point failure. Like, there's no way that I would have, like, a backup Twilight Heroes server, or backup Metroplexity server. So, yeah, if we were very lucky, I'd have two separate servers sitting next to each other. But, yeah, I'm very happy with our hosting solution, despite things occasionally going slightly pear-shaped. It's just sort of the nature of computers, and I'm not delusional enough to think that my involvement would make it a lot better. I'm actually not a much of a hardware person, also, for what it's worth. So, if anything, my involvement would make it worse. It's been a number of years since I I like to say I set a NIC card on fire, being an Ethernet card. And yeah, NIC card is the worst thing, but whatever. It's like calling it an ATM machine, but it's what everyone that I've ever really dealt with that calls Ethernet cards NICs calls them NIC cards, just network interface card. But anyway, I didn't actually set it on fire per se, but there was a large amount of smoke and a charred component, which was completely the component's fault. Like, I'm sure that has nothing to do with this, but that's not the sort of thing that you shrug off lightly. But I assure you that in the, you know, computer revamp that I'm doing now, that no NIC cards will be harmed in the creation of the new computer stuff. I think that's the extent of it. Thank you all very much for asking some questions, for listening, and for playing, and donating, and the whole list of things I mentioned earlier with the, you know, talking about Twilight Heroes to your friends and social media and t-shirts, if anyone wants them in some strange change of pace, and you know, banner signatures on forums and so forth. Getting the word out. At the risk of reiterating myself, playing, you know, just, it makes me happy that people are playing the game and enjoying it. It's working on it is always fun in the global sense, but it's not always fun in the local sense. I mean, there are definitely some times where it's like, why won't you work? Do what I want! Which is a feeling that is shared by all programmers and engineers the world over. So at those times, it's like, well, at least when I get whatever this is, you know, unlocked, it's something that people will enjoy. thank you all very much, and have a happy rest of April. Enjoy May Day, and thanks.